Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
All right, today we're going to do some open mic, whatever you guys want to talk about. But we'll start off with something I ran across yesterday, plus some text messages that I received from you guys. But we're starting off with, momentarily, we're not going to go straight into it right now, but within a matter of minutes, Randolph freed people. Freed people is one word, F-R-E-E-D, people. Randolph freed people and de facto reparations. And we're going to take a look at farm. What is a farm? All right. And I came across this yesterday, thanks to one of our listeners and you too. But the USDA defines a farm as any place that produced or sold, that produces or sells or sold a normally or normally would have produced and sold at least $1,000 of agricultural products during a given year. Now, let me read that again. According to the USDA, oh, wait, man, what happened to my phone? Okay, wait a minute. Something happened with my phone. Okay, here we go. Oh, now I'm not getting everything. All right, wait a minute. I got to refresh my phone and reread it. Okay. So What we're going to do, play Faith Street while I get my phone straightened out. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect, no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
to Ohio, but my pretty countryside has been paid down the middle by a government that had no pride. The farms of Ohio have been replaced by shopping malls and music that fill the air from Seneca to Cahoga Falls. City,
we're going to do open mic today. However, we're going to start off with the Randolph Freed People and de facto reparations. And we're going to center it around one constant industry that has been present in the United States, even before we call now the United States. As a matter of fact, the whole Western Hemisphere is farming. So we're going to tie stuff into that. And according to the, well, here's the SDA. The SDA defines a farm as any place that produced or sold, or normally would have produced or sold, at least $1,000 of agricultural products in a given year. All right. Now, the operative word here or phrase would be, and I'll read it again, USDA defines a farm as, now here's, put this in quotes, any place that has produced or sold normally, or normally would have sold or produced and sold at least $1,000 worth of agricultural products in any given year. Now, it says nothing about land or acres. People that are growing microgreens now in backyards, there are people that are, one lady that I ran across, she sells rabbit manure as a fertilizer, sells it at a farmer's market. She doesn't own any rabbits. Okay. She doesn't own any rabbits at all, but she makes decent money by selling rabbit manure. She knows where to go. She's got a supply of rabbits somewhere, but she doesn't own any. So I'm taking for granted she's either getting rabbit manure for free or buying it at an extreme low markdown and buying it at a wholesale price and then selling it at retail. So you don't have to have land, particularly by the acre to have a farm, or produce farm products. And we're talking about, and for her, rabbit shit, okay, that's her cash crop. That's her cash crop. And this has been going on for, like, decades. Soap. Soap can be, if you put it together on the farm, soap can be classified as an agricultural cash crop. Amish, the Amish and Mennonites. Some families have bakeries, and they make shoe fly pies, among other things. You know, shoe fly pies, dinner rolls, whatever they sell. But, you know, in their restaurants or bakeries or whatever, those are all cash crops. And you take any number of things, God knows, God. Now, if you build sheds, that can be considered an agricultural cash, well, not crop, but an agricultural product. So once again, the FDA defines farm as any place, kitchen table, backyard, barn, what have you. There are people that are making over $200,000 a year growing stuff, agricultural products. Could be micro, it's a whole bunch of stuff, but we'll go more into detail on another podcast on that, but I'm just throwing that out there right now. Now, the Randolph Free people, and we're going to look at Ohio today. Before we open up the phone lines, like I said, open phone lines is open mic. And we're going to take a look at black townships in Ohio, de facto reparations, and farming. I'm looking at as a form of de facto reparations. Because you can manufacture 40 acres worth of soap. You don't actually need 40 acres itself. But you can manufacture 40 acres worth of soap. You can collect 40 acres worth of rabbit shit, or dung, or whatever you want to call it, and sell it. You can build 40 acres worth of sheds and sell them. So 40 acres, really, it's all in how you define it. I mean, you can get the measurements and whatnot. You can look it up online. You know, how many square feet are in an acre? When I believe it's 43,560 square feet are in 1 acre. All right. So you can harvest, like the lady I ran across yesterday on YouTube, she sells rabbit turds as fertilizer at a farmer's market. So you can source it out. You can find a whole bunch of people who have rabbit. You can find rabbit farmers and figure out a system on how you can collect 40 acres worth of rabbit poo, and then, you know, either find a network of, what do you call it, farmers markets or wherever people buy rabbit poo for fertilizer, and you can have a substantial business from that. So I want you to take a look at, you know, think of 40 acres in a different way. It doesn't have to be farmland. It can be 40 acres of backyards, because the people that are growing vegetables, microgreens, and other cash crops in their friends' backyards, and they're making, you know, $175,000 a year by growing local produce and then selling it to hospitals, selling it to restaurants, who want fresh vegetables every day. You know, what are the dimensions of a shoe fly pie or a pumpkin pie or whatever, cheesecake, whatever? You know, how many of those would you have to produce to get 40 acres worth of whatever your particular cash crop would be? So stop thinking about because a lot of people just get caught up on, well, they didn't give us our 40 acres. No, if you have a mind, and once again, there's 43,560 square feet in an acre. Look up the definition of an acre. Acre does not have to be in land. You can have an acre of water. An acre, like, for instance, when I got this reframe yesterday on what a farm is, and then I looked at, okay, wait a minute, I already knew what was in an acre. You know, because I'm looking at right now, within the last 24 hours, I have become a biofuels farmer. Now, what are biofuels? Biofuels are basically things, anything that'll burn, that's natural. Dried up grass. Like, I got my, you know, I'm in Florida, so the last hurricane that came through, it knocked some branches off of a tree, and some of those branches hit the carport and demolished the carport. So I've got a couple of piles of, like, that I have in my yard that they're not going anywhere because I'm going to essentially, chop them up, dry them out, and then put them in a pellet machine and make them into biofuels. So people can, because with biofuels, you can heat a person's home or cook food with it. But I got to ground them up and then, like I said, put them in a pellet machine and then package it. So that I'm now a biofuel manufacturer, so to speak, because it's an agricultural product. Now I have acres of land also where on the floor of that 4 acres are, you know, because they got a lot of trees there. And it's the fall of the year. I got leaves on the ground. You know, there are always branches on the ground. And we'll be collecting all that and then sorting it out, grinding it up, and then compressing that into biofuels that people can heat their homes up with, which is dramatically less expensive than propane and electric and natural gas and all that other stuff. So that's one of my new hats, biofuels manufacturer. You can also do soaps, but it's, once again, the definition of an acre, nothing says an acre has to be definitely measured in terms of land. That's just one example of an acre. And then the USDA definition of farm, and like I say, the two operative words in there, any place can be on your kitchen table. You're growing a cash crop to sell. You're growing microgreens to sell at a farmer's market or sell at a local restaurant. Or you're making some type of pie, cake, or whatever. Anything that's considered a agricultural product. Any place can be a whole lot of places. So it's only limited to your imagination. So getting back to the 40 acres, and that's what I call de facto reparations. Instead of waiting on the government to give you 40 acres or the government to give you a check, use your imagination and do what you had to do to produce 40 acres or 1,000 acres, whatever your imagination can handle. And now that's if you want to get into farming or you're on a reparations bandwagon or whatever. That's why I call it de facto reparations. Something that you can come up in your mind. And it'll be... I'm going to play because I haven't heard anybody in these reparations discussions even come up with an out-of-the-box definition and example of reparations. But anyway, so once again, you don't need any land at all. There are people, matter of fact, when you go to a farmer's market next time, talk to some of the people and, you know, find out where they're, because you'll find out, well, some of these people, their 40 acres starts right in their kitchen or a spare bedroom. Anyway, putting that out there, let's see. Before we go to the phone lines, black townships in Ohio, and we're going to start off with the Randolph Freed people. And let's go to that real quick. Randolph Freed. And I just ran across this yesterday. Okay, Randolph Freed people. Randolph Freed people. Randolph Freed people, also called the Randolph slaves, were 383 slaves who were manumitted in the will of their master. And for those who don't know what manumitted means, free, in the will of their master, John Randolph of Roanoke, Virginia. The wills of John Randolph. John Randolph was an American politician who owned 383 slaves to manage his 6,000-acre plantation. He wrote three separate wills in 1819, 1821, and 1832. If executed, they would free the slaves, purchase land to resettle them, and then or sell them to new masters respectively. He rejected the third on his deathbed. When Randolph died in 1833, his next of kin contested the wills. 13 years later, the court ruled that Randolph's 1821 will was valid. In his document, Randolph wrote, "I give and bequeath to all of my slaves their freedom, heartily regretting that I have ever been owner of one." He also set aside $8,000 to buy a plot of land for the freed slaves to live on. Following the 1846 court decision, Judge William Lee, the chosen executor of the Randolph's will, purchased 2,000 acres of land in Mercer County, Ohio. And the reason why I picked Ohio is because somebody from Ohio yesterday asked me about, because we were talking about townships and black townships and that type of thing. Anyway, relocation. The Randolph Freed people left for Ohio in the same year. They were provided with a 16-wagon convoy. However, most walked. They camped along the side of the road in tents. After reaching the Kanawha, West Virginia, the group took a steamboat to Cincinnati, Ohio, a month after beginning their journey. Then they sailed up the Miami Erie Canal and arrived at Mercer County, Ohio. As they were about to disembark, armed German settlers stopped them at the shore and told Mr. Cardwell, the wagon master, that the free people must leave town by 10 a.m. the following morning, and that they would not be compensated for the lost land. In other words, they got land jacked. The Mercer County settlers also wrote three resolutions to remove the free people. One of them read, "Resolve that we will not live among the Negroes. We will not live among Negroes as we have settled here first. We have fully determined that we will resist settlement of blacks and mulattoes in this country to the full extent of our means, with guns, the bayonet not accepted." Although Cardwell volunteered to be in prison in exchange for the safety of the freed people, the settlers denied the offer. Following the confrontation, the Randolph Freed people ultimately the Spurs and set up to their never say die attitude. The Randolph Free People ultimately dispersed and set up communities throughout Miami and Shelby counties, Ohio. One of these communities, the Randolph Settlement in Rossville, Ohio. On the 18th of February, 1857, James Riel, one of the free people, bought a plot of land, a plot from landowner W.W. McFarland, founding the Randolph Settlement. Randolph Settlement eventually became the site of Andrew Jackson Cemetery. Now, let me relate how what these people did in 1857. And these people were born slaves. But it's happening again today. I've mentioned on here, and I'm trying to get them on this podcast, the Freedom Georgia Initiative. There are other groups. Matter of fact, I would say there have always been groups of people that if they didn't like living in a particular city, they would basically get together and buy land. There's at least 800 or 900 black townships in the United States that are over 100 years old. And in many downtown sectors of major cities, that just a lot of people don't know about, but they've been around for over 100 years. So the Freedom Georgia Initiative, everybody starts out legally at no matter how many acres you have as a settlement. And then if you want to turn it into a municipal corporation where you have a city council, a mayor, and all this other stuff, you know, that some aim to do that, and others decide to – I'll give a good example. There's Taft, Oklahoma, which has a population of maybe about 350 people. That's a municipal city, all right? They have a municipal corporate charter. They make revenue. They have two prisons there that they make revenue off of. And they sell water. They have municipal water that they sell to the residents of Taft who want it. That's how they make their revenue. They may have some other revenue streams, but those are the three I know about. Sandwiched right next door to Taft, literally, is a place that you probably won't even find on the internet. But it's real because I've been there 5 or 6 times. Because it's literally right. It's like you can, one step, you're in Taft. You take another step, you're in Blackjack, Oklahoma. But it's not incorporated. So most people would call that a settlement. So, and Blackjack's probably over 100 years old because Taft's over 100 years old. All right. So the Freedom Georgia Initiative right now, it's a 502 settlement. But they're working, and they're still in the very embryo stages of it. They started out with 96 acres. Now they have 502 acres. But it's a settlement. But their goal is to work to become a municipal charter where they have their own police force and own fire department, own mayor and city council, that type thing. So, you know, it all depends on what you want. I prefer just keeping it raw and simple as a settlement. But like I say, those communities have been popping up since day one, really. So if you want to become mayor of your own place, I suggest you go out and get you some land and build your own thing. Anyway, getting back to Randolph, the Randolph Free People, reunions and settlement, all right. On In July 1900, the surviving free people held a reunion at Midway Park, which they formed the Randolph Ex-Slaves Association. 62 of the original Virginian slaves attended, known as Old Dominions, as well as the Buckeyes. That's those from Ohio. Reunions of the Old Dominions were held annually from 1900 to 1906, whereas 100 to 300 people attended in 1907. 170 free people filed lawsuits to obtain compensation of land in Mercer County that they had been removed from, either in the form of land itself or $38,000. The Mercer County Common Pleas Court ruled that no compensation would be awarded as the statute of limitations, 21 years, had expired. The case lasted 10 years and went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. It affirmed the decisions of the court and people. Long story short, they do have some black townships in Ohio. And once again, a historic black township is something that was set up by a slave or former slave. And then some, and how, the towns that do not exist, because a lot of those towns that started, they were very entrepreneurial. And they operated just like on a Factory City audio that I played for you guys. Back then they had cotton gins, accommodations. Many of them grew food and sold it. But when what happened is a lot of people, some of those towns did die because some of those people moved to larger towns, particularly when electricity came into play. But now you're seeing a trend, just not with some isolated black folks, but just people in general. You have eco-villages that have popped up in many places. And these are people that essentially want to live off the grid. They don't want an electric bill. They don't want a heating bill. They can police themselves. So they're all over the place. And a lot of these towns are really not in remote areas, but they're rural. But they're striking distance of a town where you can get anything, you know, Walmart or what, you know, whatever. And then let's see, before we go to the phone lines, let's see. Since they did bring up Ohio. Okay. Land-wise, Ohio is a predominantly rural state. All but five counties have more than 50% of the area classified as rural, and 65 counties in the state of Ohio. All right. See, 65 counties. 65 counties in Ohio are more than 90% rural. So for your particular state, you can look that up. I'm going to do another state here. Let's see. Let's go to Illinois. Okay, in Ohio, has 12,830,632 residents. Of that total, 1,477,079 people, or 11.4 5% live in rural counties. Okay. Let's see. Now I'm trying to get the ratio here. All right. How many counties in Illinois are rural? Illinois has 102 counties, and in 2013, 83 of the 102 counties in Illinois, that's well over half. That's damn near all of them. Well, 80-20. Okay. Out of 102 counties in the state of Illinois, 83 of those counties are classified as rural. Now, let's go back to the first stat we had on Illinois. Illinois, now this is as of 2010 census, 12,830,632 residents, and only 1,477,079 people. If you wonder why there's so many shootings in Chicago, this is just my theory. When you got a good percentage of the people that live in the entire state that live in just one county, Cook County, I'm not even getting into Chicago yet, which is in Cook County. This is just me and my thinking. That's unnatural. It's cabin fever. I'm an extremist, though. How many counties? Put me out in the in the 83 counties that are classified in rural. Because any of those counties are basically, to a high degree, or like, say, if you want to go to work, if you want to go bowling, if you want to go to the shopping mall, you know, you go to those places. And it doesn't take that long to get there. You might have to drive 30 minutes, 45 minutes an hour, you know, but... You know, two inches on, everybody's got a different situation. Okay, let's, before I go to the phone lines here, and like I say, it's open mic, so we'll talk about anything you guys want to talk about. Let's go to New York, which okay, New York now, we've all heard of New York City, the most populated city in the United States. And New York City is made up of five boroughs. Manhattan, which has over 1 million people. Manhattan is only 3 miles wide and 12 miles long. And you got over 1 million people that live there. God knows how many people, when it's daylight hours, come through New York City. I mean, Manhattan. Then you got Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island, okay. Now, that's just New, but that's just one city, all right, in New York State. Rural New York State makes up more than 86.8% of the land mass in the state of New York. That's out of 53 counties. So you New Yorkers who are struggling, you know, where you can pay $800, $900, or $1,000 a month for a room, not an apartment, but a room in somebody's house. If you're tired of struggling, I would suggest you take a look at upstate New York, because the majority of New York State, 86% of it, is rural. Most of your states, of the 50 states, are rural areas. And there is a trend. Now, it's not going to be a mass exodus. I don't think that there's not going to be a mass exodus, because people are just addicted. The general population is addicted to the comfort and conveniences of big city life. However, if you're struggling right now, my suggestion is look 30 minutes to 90 minutes away and find your area, and I'm sure you'll find a nice, sustainable area in a rural area where you can at least breathe. And if you build a house, not have somebody build it for you, but if you learn how to build one, then you'll look at it. All right. So, you know, one last state. I'm in Florida. I got to look at it. I'm in the statistics. I'm in Florida at the present time. I know we have 67 counties. Let's see. Okay, I'll go for a few states here. All right. All right, give me a moment here. My phone's rebooting. All right, here we go. Oh, wait a minute. That's not the right number I want. Okay, percentage of Florida that, okay. No wonder I didn't get what I want. All right, and I'm still not getting what I want. And I'm not trying to download anything either. Okay, well, trust me on this one. Florida's a rural state. It's got 67 counties. And the only spots that are really urbanized are Broward County, Fort Lauderdale, that's where Fort Lauderdale is. Miami, which is in Dade. Neither one of those cities takes up the whole county, but I'm just saying. Out of 67 counties, Broward, Dade, Pinellas, Hillsborough, Orlando, which is Orange County, state capital Tallahassee, 6, and Jacksonville, Duval County, has 7. That's 7 cities. Anything outside of what I just said out of the 67 is rural. You got cows and you got a lot of cows and horses in Florida. That's not the image you see when they're promoting Miami Vice or South Beach or Disney World. But there's a lot of cows and horses and farmland all throughout the state. I was just trying to find out the rural, but it's let's see. There's a map. Okay. All right, the map I'm looking at here for Florida, they have rural counties color-coded in green, and then they have urban counties, which are counted which are color coded in pink. Now, if you're looking for land, what I would suggest is, because I look, now this is me, I don't look for anything zoned residential. I look for agricultural land. Because for me personally, it gives you the most amount of freedom. You can do what you want to do. So here in Florida, or anywhere you might be at, the best places to buy land, somebody asked me this question last night, look for a county that is classified as a rural county. You do shy away from, now this is just me, I'll just put it on me. I'm not going to buy anything in an urbanized county. It's going to be more expensive than everything, right? The county that I'm in right now is classified as rural. I'm kind of surprised at that. Oh, wait, excuse me. All right. The county that I'm in is now classified as urban. But where I have my 4 acres in this state, the county is classified as rural. So I would recommend when you're looking for land, look for a rural county and avoid an urbanized county. Go for the rural stuff. And then, anyway, that's just my suggestion. You do what you want to do. Okay, now I got to find my way back to the studio here. Give me a moment, because I'm operating on my phone. So open mic, anything you guys want to talk about? Let's see. It is Friday, and Thanksgiving is a countdown away. Speaking of which, today is November 4th. And we're going to cover this on November the 11th. On November the 11th is Singles Day in China, which really has nothing to do with singles. But Singles Day in China is Singles Day. Let me relate it this way. We've all heard of Black Friday, we here in the United States, which is the biggest, traditionally the biggest selling day here in the United States, you know, because people get ready for, you know, Christmas and all that. Well, Singles Day, which is November the 11th in China, is the biggest selling day on the planet. And how do they do it? And we'll cover this on November 11th. We covered it last year. But you guys can do it too. Is on Singles Day in China, a lot of people get on their smartphones, which probably everybody who's listening to me has one. And farmers sell out their crops by doing live streams through their cell phones, I mean their smartphones. There's one lady, and we'll talk about her on November 11th. Between her and another guy, they sold over 400, two people sold over $400 million worth of merchandise in less than a day using their smartphones. So that's on Singles Day. We'll cover that and you know, how you can do it as well. On November 11th, and we'll probably have at least one show before that. But that's coming over here as well. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines right now. 602 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, LA. It's Pastor Don Jr. CEO. How you feeling today, brother?
Fine.
Man, hey, I got a topic of discussion. Do you know at the airport it started going to do red wave for plane tickets?
Repeat that again.
The airport is going to start doing layaway for plane tickets. So you don't have to have all the money to fly anymore. You can put it on layaway. Just like
Christmas. Oh, I never heard of that. Okay. Now, when is that stuff? Oh, you just heard. Okay.
Yep, I'm bringing it to the show. It's my house, so I'm bringing it to your house. That's a great topic of discussion because a lot of people want to fly and make moves. They don't have the money right now. So now you can go put your plane ticket on layaway. Outside of that, man, I'm good.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, man, I got a lot of artists. And one of my artists is about to be featured on the cover of Rolling Stone, and it feels good when you do your business and you give vindication because your people are being heard. So I appreciate you. I text out 1,000 people and told them all, hey, come on into my house and get involved. So y'all win the team, press that #1 on your keypad and get involved in the conversation. But LA, I love what you do. I'm a big, avid supporter. Keep doing your thing, brother. I'm right here.
And now when do you have give us the information for your live streams.
My radio show is at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Winning Team Wednesday. Every Wednesday we do a live broadcast. We all about the business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs, people trying to change the world. We all get on, just like we're on this show right now. You dial in. Call me direct if you want more details, 602-478-1619, 602-478-1619. But we all about supporting shows like this. I love the energy. I love the topics. And I love the fact of you educating the people who don't know how to get to the bag. So keep doing your thing, LA. I appreciate you, bro. Ooh.
Okay, appreciate it. All right, talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, definitely support him. He's been on here quite a number of years. Anyway, we got open mic today. We start off with the Randolph Free People and de facto reparations, where we can talk about anything you guys want to talk about. Area code 309, your mic is open. Okay, you might have stepped away from the mic.
Yes, this is Chris. I'm actually at the job site.
Oh, Chris. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good, brother. How you doing this morning?
Good, good, good. So what do you have on the agenda up in your neck of the woods?
Well, I did get a phone call 2 days ago, and they want 10 houses up in Baltimore. Somebody that owns a bunch of land has gave me a contract that I can use the land and put temporary houses on, help get the people off the street and on their feet. And there's been 10 companies step up, and they asked me how much do they need to put down for me to deliver them. They want 10 of them immediately, but they're talking about 2,500 of them. So that was a kind of nice update.
Now, and all right, Baltimore is an urbanized city, so we're talking about what, new construction?
Yeah, new construction.
Okay. Well, there's a lot. That's an interesting city because Baltimore's got like a lot of. I know they have at least 15,000 vacant houses up there, and I don't know how many vacant lots.
Right, and that's why we want to utilize the vacant lots. But while we're doing that, either revitalize the homes that are already there or take them down and build new ones.
Okay. Man, so hold up. Seeing if I can get that statistic now. Okay, Baltimore City. Let's see. As of January 28, 2022, there were 15,032 vacant houses in Baltimore City. About 13,560 of these vacant properties have private owners. But I was looking for over 15,000 vacant houses. But how many? They probably have just as many lots as well. Because they do have a lot of building lots in Baltimore City, but and houses have been knocked down, land's been cleared, but it's nothing nothing on those. They haven't been redeveloped into some of those places that some of the neighbors wanted the those lots redeveloped into parks, which maybe some were, but well, good for Baltimore. Now they've tried to, what I know about Baltimore, they've tried to revive that city, and they have revived parts of it over the years. The Inner Harbor, they did a pretty good job with that when Mayor Schaefer was in there. And Fells Point, which is east of the Inner Harbor, they did a pretty good job with that. John Hopkins, I believe, which I think they're the largest private employer in Baltimore, in and around John Hopkins, those areas, from what I remember, seem pretty decent. I don't know, but Baltimore, because like the northern part of Baltimore, where they have like some mini mansions, that wasn't a bad area. So, Chris, do you know what? Any specific areas of Baltimore that they're talking about?
No, they did not say.
Okay, well,
anywhere in Baltimore, something positive happening is good.
No. So, repeat that again, because somebody yelled.
Nah, my brother broke his glasses right when I was speaking there, and he hollered no, so I didn't know if that's what you heard or not. What was your question?
No, you were saying anything in Baltimore. I didn't hear the whole statement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, anything happening positive in Baltimore is going to be positive. And
I agree.
You know, the only way there's going to be growth anywhere is to not judge what happened yesterday, but let's change tomorrow. So I'm not gonna judge a person there because it's not my job. But the one thing about it is they're going to get an opportunity. I can't make anybody on earth. It wouldn't matter if you're in Atlanta or if you're in Baltimore or if you're in Chicago or – if you're in a smaller town, smaller city, I can't make you make your mind up. So as we talk about this and, you know, talk about the different things, the farming and all these different aspects, you know, the people that are listening, do I think they're going to do anything about it today? A few. Because I'm going off of what has been in the past. We can inform people every day, but it's what their actions are and their accountability afterwards. Are their words worth anything? Now, these people said something to me. I've been sitting here on the sideline waiting for the past month, and I got a phone call telling me they got the contracts and stuff, and they want to sit up now. They're ready to move. So I'm seeing action behind their words, but I wasn't there.
Right.
I wasn't looking for the property. I wasn't doing any of that stuff. It's what the community is bringing to me as I'm bringing something to the community. So, you know, to me, I know that they're putting this where it's needed in Baltimore. because it meets all over it. So wherever we wind up at, I know that there's 10 companies that are behind this right now, so that's something positive, that are willing to actually put up the money and buy these houses.
Right.
So
now
that's a step.
Oh,
that's a step in the right direction. Go ahead.
Something that you brought up last week, Habitat for Humanity, that because a lot of people look at that as affordable housing, but they've had some foreclosures too, which I never thought about it that way. But could you share some of that? I mean, you know, success ratio with Habitat?
I know it's somewhere in the ballpark around 50% gets repossessed and foreclosed on, because the one thing that we're not doing in that program is we're not giving these people something that'll be a fail-safe. They could lose their job, and now they lose their home. And that's not good. We need to make sure that that person's picked right back up and they can carry on. But to leave them, you know, they once they sell you a house and they take your money, we don't do anything at that point. If we leave them at home, sorry, I'm on the job. I'm moving a few things.
Right, you're working.
But this is how we multitask, you know, be intentional. You know, I'm here, I'm listening, and, you know, we're talking about all kinds of different things. But then you ask me, what's new? And I was like, well, I do have some new things. So here I reach out, and we share, but then we get into something deeper. You know, what is the root situation in Baltimore? There's been a lot of bad things have happened, you know, just to people in general, just to society, on things that's happened in Baltimore. So, to me, I think we just have to be the change we want to see. We want to do something, let's do it. Give these people some dignity that don't have anything. Let's give them their needs, because that's what
right.
I want. And let them make up their own mind. I can't make anybody do that, you know. So, but I also can give them an opportunity to make up their own mind. And to me, that's growth. That's me learning. So I'm going to learn who they are, who they can become, you know, what kind of superpowers they got. Even though they don't know they have them, they have them. It's just, what is it? But when you got a city full of down, go ahead, bro.
Yes, but speaking of superpowers, somebody just asked me who I have on the show today. I said, well, it's Chris Collins. So, Chris, share with us, because we got some new listeners here. Who are you? And then explain your superpowers, particularly with your organization.
My name is Chris Collins, and I am the founder of HOPE. I'll give you a double dose of HOPE. Humans on Planet Earth, those are my partners. Housing our people everywhere. Teaching our children that they are the solution to every adult's problem. As I am a light, and I am going to bring people out of the dark, take the blinders off, and let you realize you're not alone. If you have a problem, it's not just your problem, it's all of our problems. And that's the problem that we have with society today. They don't worry about other people's problems above themselves. So you're the human race. We're human beings, but we're not being human. So the difference between a human being and being human, a human being thinks of themselves above others, and being human thinks of others above themselves. And I want to show our children that they're creators every second of the day, and I want to see their dreams become realities, because every dream is a reality that just hasn't happened yet. In 2011, I built the greenest built home Congress hand-delivered a letter to President Obama, and it says that we had created a way to give the homeless homes and the jobless jobs and never use another tree by recovering and rebuilding every natural disaster and using the recycled material from that disaster to build something that can be recycled 1,000 times or it can last 1,000 years, but give our children a legacy to live on forever. So that's me in a little nutshell. Got a lot more, but was that a good enough intro, my friend?
Yes, sir, it was. Wait a minute. Let me make a quick announcement. I just got this text in. Next Thursday morning, and we usually start on time, we do our Claude Anderson intro, which is about 3-4 minutes long. But right after that, we're going to have, it's taking me some time again, we're going to have on one of the founders or people from the Freedom Georgia Initiative. For those of you who are not familiar with the Freedom Georgia Initiative, and if you go online, that's their website, the Freedom Georgia Initiative. If you go on, YouTube, it's just put in Freedom Georgia. That's their YouTube channel. Let me give the backstory on them. This is a very critical interview that we'll be doing. It started off with two African-American women. They ran across some land in Georgia, and they say, you know what, let's get some people together and buy this land. And they were talking about 96 acres, actually 96.71 acres. So they said, they're two best friends. And one said, you know what, you talk to 10 of your friends, I'll talk to 10 of my friends about, you know, let's get together and practice some cooperative economics and get this land. So out of the two ladies that started with zero cash, they came up with 19 families, and 19 families purchased 97 acres of land. Since then, they have purchased up to 502 acres, and the name of their project is called the Freedom Georgia Initiative. Their goal is to have their own, it's a settlement right now, the 502 acres that they got in an incredibly short period of time. They might have more than 19 families now. We'll find that out next Thursday. But next Thursday morning, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9:30 Central, you definitely want to tune into that live stream where you'll get to talk to these people one-on-one direct. So that's I just got a text from them. It took me like three phone calls and a text chat, but we finally got them after about 2 months. So that's next Thursday, 10:30 a.m., 9:30 Central, for the Freedom, because you want to find out, because what they're doing, okay, they're not alone, but what they're doing is I see as a trend of just small groups of people getting together and you know, developing land for their own community or what have you. Now, where Chris comes in at, Chris Collins, he's a builder. And, you know, so, Chris, you've done so many interesting things with the teenagers. Could you share that with us?
Yeah. We started a youth program down in Louisiana at one of the factories, and the kids came in and they built two house frames, and they never touched a saw because the machinery that we have in there cuts all the material to length, and all they have to do is put the jigsaw puzzle together. It's actually an erector set, but they put the components in place. They put a half-inch screw together, and they went out on the site to a habitat build, actually, and there was adults working next door, and they already had the house framed up. They had the walls all standing. And when the kids showed up, they actually stood all the walls up on an empty slab and then put the trusses on it and outbuilt the house that was next door. And these kids had never built anything before, but they built a house that was superior. you know, if you look at the two of them side by side, I would rather be in the metal one because I know that I could get out of it if there was a fire about something, one of the components that I buy and bring into it, because my component ain't gonna buy. But it would be something else, you know, so people can actually get out of a house fire. But being something that's twice as strong as wood and, you know, save them on insurance and stuff. But it's more the kids, what they got out of it. Not, they didn't touch a saw, but it's what they saw. They saw what their hands can do, because peace on earth is in the palm of your hand. And we want to show our kids that if they want to, if they think they have to live by a pistol grip, I have one. But this one here saves lives. But you know what that other one does when it ain't in your hands? Saves lives too. So we want to show them that they don't have to be angry. We want to show them that they don't have to be envious, because everyone can have. And every person on earth deserves a home and needs equality, because everyone, there's no life worth more than another. And the sad part is the human being that has more thinks they're worth more, thinks they deserve more. And actually they're in the total wrong realm of mindset, because we're only as strong as our weakest link. So let's make our chain out of titanium. Let's pick up those links and carry them while we mend them. But once we stretch it back out, everybody can stretch out and be relaxed and know that there is going to be a legacy for our children. They will continue without us leaving this planet. We can set out and make a foundation as strong as granite. And I'll hang up.
And Chris, to get in touch with you direct, give us your website and phone number.
It is hopeforhousing.org or hopeforhousing.com. And my phone number is 309-542-6319. That's 309-542-6319. And you don't have to put the www dot in the website. Just type in Hope for Housing. And if you actually put in the number 4.org, that works as well. So thank you. Yeah, I'd definitely like to share that.
Okay, and we'll be doing some collaborations with Chris where we'll be doing live build events with Chris where you'll be getting hands-on instruction on building. And, you know, the reason why I like the idea in collaborating with Chris on this is one of the questions I was I was having a conversation with somebody on another project that they own 100-plus acres as well. And but they have decided as a group, I'm just paraphrasing because I don't know all their business, but they voted to bring in, I guess, a professional builder in for whatever, whereas this one person I was talking to, they really wanted to, the members of their community, actually learn how to build and build their own structure. So this is another reason why I want you guys to tune in next Thursday morning, because I believe the Freedom Georgia Initiative, they'll be building their own structure. But the collaborations that we do with Chris Collins, who's right here on the air with us today, Chris is he's an advanced builder, okay? And we're going to bring him in. Well, at least two locations, but we had to discuss it, but we had to, we'll announce it to you when we get it all straight in the details, where there'll be a little bit of lecture, but there'll be hands-on. So it'll be like the title of this podcast, It's My House, It Will Be Your House. Let's go to another caller here. 407 area code, your mic is open.
Greetings. This is Viata with Blog Talk Radio Female Solution and Soul Purpose Healing. Thank you. All the good things you're doing for our youth and for our earth. I just had a question. I thought I heard you say we're not really humans. Is that what you said?
No, I said, were human beings not being human?
Oh, okay. Okay, so how do you differentiate that, or that those two phrases?
Well, a human being, but here I'll start out with, what is humane? Okay, it's against the law to have your animal outside in the winter, but it's okay to have your mother, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, grandmother, grandfather, grandson, granddaughter, niece, nephew, and your dad. That's okay. So I get to the root of it. You know, what is humane? So when we look at what we are the human race. If you look at the palm of your hand, it's pink. I don't care what other color it is. We have different cultures, but we have one race. And we need to teach our children that. They don't need to think of any other thing besides the human race. And we will set them up for a beautiful future in making sure that the history isn't going to repeat itself, because we need to think of others above ourselves, because the people that are down have nowhere to go but up. The people that up have nowhere to go but down. So where's the balancing act? Let's take the level from poverty to prosper. I'm sorry, ma'am.
No, I totally agree with you. I think that's awesome that you are giving us a different perspective on this journey we're having on planet Earth. And that's one of the reasons I changed my health show from health and wellness to health and well-being, because we really do need to, in my opinion, focus on who are we being on this journey. And that's so interesting that you talk about how we don't let dogs stay outside, but we let people, homeless people, stay outside. That's kind of the insanity that's going on. So thank you, Mr. Collins, for all that you're doing to wake us up. I think we are all in a very important season on planet Earth to raise our consciousness about what we have been, the insanity and the ignorance in our history. And we're at a point now to change that paradigm and walk forward in a whole new way, new dimensions and all that. So thank you for sharing today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for coming in here and asking me the question, because that, you know, I don't want you to misunderstand what I say, because I want our children to understand what I say. So that's real important to me. You know, go ahead, sir.
I have two grandchildren, and they're 6 and 8. And I've already taught them how to play chess, or actually me and their dad. Their dad's divorced. But they're going to learn all that you're talking about, if I have anything to do with it, about learning how to build, learning how to be more unselfish, more conscious. I think all of us as adults have an opportunity to teach every youth in our environment and our family something different than what the past 100 years or 1,000 years have been teaching, which was total ignorance. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you. The thing about, you know, what our kids are learning and who they're becoming, I had a girl tell me the other day that she was like her dad. She has a temper that she just can't control. And I told her, I said, no, ma'am, I said, you are you. You are not your dad. I said, my dad beat me. I said, but I looked at my dad and I told him, I said, I'll never do to my children what you did to me. And, you know, the one thing that was nice is before my dad passed, you know, here I was a grown man raising 6 stepkids. I had 4 of my own, but I only had 3 of them. And, you know, he looked at me and told me that I was the best dad that he had ever seen. And that meant a lot, because my dad wasn't a dad. My dad, I never dreamed that he could ever stop drinking, any of that. But I did watch him do it. But I also watched him, you know, with dementia, and watched him disappear. So, but, you know, he went through life always thinking he was an Indian. And I wound up getting my DNA done and found out that he wasn't. Was 0%. There ain't no percentage So as he was, you know, going through dementia and we were visiting him on the last time, he got to realize what he always thought he was, he wasn't. So everything we ever think we are, we're not. We're what we're going to be, not what we were. And it comes down to opening our minds, realize how powerful your mind is, because you're the only one that can ever make it up. No one can ever make your mind up for you. That's the amazing thing about free will. But the one thing we can get out of life is we can get people's education and we can get their experience by paying attention. So I always try to surround myself with people that are smarter than me so I can continue to always learn. And if I ever walk in a room and I'm the smartest one, I'm more than likely going to teach for a minute, but I'm leaving because I got to go get me some. I don't want to be the total teacher. I want to be the one that's learning. So I want our children to be the teacher. And when they come home and say, hey, come look at what we did this afternoon. And you go over and you see it. And then they look at you and say, they told me you could come tomorrow and do it with me if you want. And now we have something to get the family unit doing to change someone else's family unit. I took a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old 2 Novembers ago. So here I am on the 3rd November now. And I built a tiny house with them in 2.5 hours. And that 13-year-old, I was screwing this truss together after he laid out all the components. He says, man, let me have that gun. You don't need to do that. And he took the gun from me, and he started screwing it off. And, you know, he's putting the stuff in place where it's supposed to go. He knows what we did. We laid it out. And he just took it and went with it. I just stepped back and started taking pictures of him because that's how amazing every child on earth is. Adults, you know, we're in the dark. We're running around here trying to figure out what life is actually about. And here our children are learning from what they see. So when you act out, you say something in the wrong way, just like that girl thought that she was like her dad, I showed her that she could scream at me and say anything she wanted in her mind and never open her mouth, never make an expression. And I said, and you can get it off your chest and not let it be said, because you can be forgiven, but you can't be forgotten. So if you do something and you say something, this is something that you are and you potentially could do again because you already had done it. So if people are going to do things they ain't never done before, let's do something positive. But if people are going to continue to do what they have been doing, let's change that narrative a little bit and just keep your mouth shut if you're going to hurt somebody's feelings. And you'll see whether or not your day will change.
I know, you know, we have to forgive. We don't have to, but we can forgive our parents, because what you shared about your father and her father, they learned that from their parents. And this new generation, like you said, is very observant. They see things and they want to change it. And so that makes them more conscious in my mind. This generation is more conscious than the previous ones, because baby boomers, which I'm a part of, we're a little bit unconscious. We had all that sugar in our diet, and we had all that that public school education. And then when the new generation came out, we taught them what we knew, which was not correct as far as raising us to be more conscious. So I had to forgive my alcoholic mother, who didn't show any nurturing energy to me as a child, and I did strange, crazy things because of that. But there's a theory that we choose our parents before we go into the womb. And if you can believe that, then you know we came here to learn certain lessons from our parents. And part of it is forgiveness, that they had parents, your grandparents, my grandparents, who were a little bit unconscious and alcoholic and all the other things that made them who they were: violent, abusive, uncaring, didn't know how to nurture, all the things that we were lacking in our childhood. We are now conscious and aware that need to have a change now. I didn't like the way I was raised, and I'm going to do better now. So that's why you're doing what you're doing, what I'm doing. We all are now woke and know what needs to be changed, and that's a good thing.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. 100%.
Thank you.
Viola, when's you got a Sunday podcast? Give us the time and info on that.
Well, Sunday, oh, my goodness. I think my Sunday show is at 8 o'clock p.m., Soul Purpose Healing, Blog Talk Radio. And it's got to be about, I already took a question on. The question is maybe about how many apologies do we need to get to peace and unity? Because the thing that just happened with Kyrie Irving is like blowing my mind. And if we know and understand who trained Kyrie Irving, his father, he didn't grow up in and programming that other kids grew up in, obviously. So we're now in a culture, a cancel culture, and everybody needs to apologize. But I think with the wrong people are asking to apologize when it ought to be the reverse. Who has a history of abusing certain groups, and they need to apologize? So my show will probably be about apologies. How many apologies do we need from anybody before we can get to peace and unity? So that's what I'm thinking sitting here. I'm still in Lakeland following a truck around to clean up the debris of trees. I heard him saying we don't need to kill any more trees. Hell, the Hurricane Ian killed enough trees for us. That's the beauty of hurricanes, is that all these trees were trimmed and we got trees sitting all over the place and they've been cut off. Those are the parts we need to use. We need to recycle. And so what they do, they take all these loads to the dump, and then they grind them up and make fertilizer or compost out of them. So they're utilizing the trees that came off the branches and trunks that died from Hurricane Ian, which is really how we should operate. So recycle in after the hurricane. So that's what I've been involved in. And so many people are so grateful just to have somebody come and pick up a pile of leaves and trunks. And then some other neighborhoods, and they're not so grateful. But I've enjoyed this experience immensely for what it's taught me about trees, for one, and how healing trees can be, as well as giving. Trees are amazing, and he's right. We shouldn't kill them unnecessarily, but when they give up their branches in hurricanes, let's use them. It's a gift.
No, I agree with you there. And the other thing is, all right, you're talking about them recycling and making them that trees into mulch. What do you think they're doing with the washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, water heaters, and cars?
Oh, they're just piling them up, aren't they?
Oh, let's talk about that. Because I built the greenest built home in America out of recycled cars from Hurricane Katrina in 2011.
Wow.
Yeah. Now I'm sitting with three factories that'll make up to 36,000 linear feet of building material per day. And it belongs to every child on earth, every adult as well, but all the adults have to earn it by learning it. But you're going to learn it because the children are going to become the teachers. Because we've got to do something.
Okay, so where are you located?
Excuse me?
Where are you located?
I'm actually in Illinois, but my home office that was in Florida was in Northport, and it actually got hit by Ian and went underwater. So I've got to set up another spot in Florida. So I know I'm one of the victims as well, but here I am in Illinois. But the true victims are the people that aren't hearing the message of what can happen from this material and what it could be doing immediately right there, right now.
Right.
We can make the roofing material, the framing material, so we can fix the houses that just need a roof, but we can turn around and build homes for the ones that don't have one and the ones that didn't have one. So you fix the problems in the city that its city had before the storm. And, you know, I built a home right after Hurricane Katrina in 2006. It's 2,500 square feet. It's in Pearlington, Mississippi, on the corner of Tampa and Daytona Street. in Kings Harbor. I think that's a Kings Harbor little subdivision, right on the water, 2,500 square feet. We framed it all in Illinois, put it on a truck, shipped it down there, and stood it up. It's on stilts, 10 feet off the ground. But that house saves $11,000 a year in insurance versus the wooden one next door to it. It's only 1,500 square foot. It's 1,000 square foot smaller than this one. But we also were able to build it for 25% of what they wanted locally for a local contractor to build it out of wood. So right now you go buy a 2x4, costs you 10, 12, 14 bucks. So if I can make one and I make 120 feet of material per minute, why, or do you have a homeless problem? Because you don't know about this solution, and everybody there needs to know that they can have this. We do have 70 people that are working in Tennessee on a production line, and they put out 4 complete homes a day, which 3 of them just went through Ian and didn't lose anything. They're perfectly fine, but they just rode through it. But these houses are being on a production line. They're being completed 8-foot by 20-foot every day, 4 of them. Now, we want to put 70 more people to work there, and we want to create more of these facilities. But we got one going that has that capability. And we want people to know that you can have any design that's ever been designed, so any blueprint that's ever been made, but every one that ever will be, because this material exceeds every residential building code in the IRC. That's the International Residential Code Book. So not just the United States. It reaches and exceeds all of it. So this is a material that's used in commercial products. It's not used in commercial application, but it's not being used in residential. But the thing is we're losing all of our people that's doing commercial work, that's the infrastructure of our country, and these kids don't realize what their capabilities are with their hands. They're not building, they're not creating, they're not putting things together. Not necessarily building, just putting things together. So
are you saying that the material from washers and dryers can be recycled?
Oh yeah, I can take the washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, water heaters, and cars, all that steel material, take it to your recycling center. You know how they're putting it right out on the curb and it's in two piles right now? You got the debris pile and you got the metal recycling pile?
Yeah.
That is because I infected Nashville with that solution. And they've cleaned up every disaster that way since then. But now we want to be able to get to your local government. Usually the phone, like when there's a disaster coming, usually the phone line's stupid trying to get a hold of the city to work this out where this contingency needs to happen. But the city of Northport, you know, I was in a conversation with the city manager, the county commissioner, and the city commissioner. And the county commissioner for Sarasota County before the storm, because that's where my home office was. But after the storm, I've had a real problem having a conversation with them, because you guys have been crazy trying to repair, trying to recover, trying to deal with what is going on when that material is piling up, like you said. So let's get it. And all we got to do is send it to the recycling center, and we can turn around and start producing it and give a sustainable way of life and just start creating it. That's the beautiful thing about this, and it's just a call out, you know. It's saying, look, we need to do this.
They have a lot of opportunities right now in the Sarasota, Tampa area to do that, I think. In fact, Fort Myers, they say the cleanup there is going to take a year or more. So
exactly.
Are you able to contribute to that cleanup or recycling in that area?
We can recycle all of this material. Every material on earth, we can recycle it. There's already recycling centers. I'm not even building a recycling center. I'm partnering with every recycling center in the country and in the world. When the Ukraine when the Ukraine situation, just, you know, look at that disaster. It's a war, but it was a disaster because these people, these refugees, 10 million people come across the Poland border. Well, when they done that, the Congress of Poland reached out to me because they were having a summit to get a solution. They asked me for a solution to the problem. Well, when I told them that it was going to cost $500 million, they told me, why is it going to cost $500 million? I said, we just gave you $20 billion. Give me $500 million so I can house 10 million.
Right.
I'm going to give these people a purpose. I'm going to give them a reason to live. But also, these homes can be picked up and taken back to the Ukraine as they rebuild there. But have a place. Have pride. Let's give them a purpose. And it was all about, you know, why is it going to cost this much money? Well, what are you going to buy? Some weapons with it? You know, we can win this war without a weapon of mass destruction. We can do it with weapons of reconstruction, and that's our hands. That's why I say peace on earth and it's in your hands. That's what our logo is. Because it's
I agree with you, but that situation is so political. Oh my goodness. You know, certain families have been invested in the Ukraine for many years now, and that's part of the battle, is that the money that's invested in that country, that by certain politicians in our government, it's so political. Like, I don't think it's an easy solution to what's going on in Ukraine and Russia, because boy, politics is everywhere there.
There's no easy solution to any of these situations, but there is a solution. There's a solution for every problem.
Well,
but the first problem we have to do is claim it.
Yes. That's true. The phrase is, the universe is a perpetual solution waiting for the question, something like that. So, yeah, you're right. There's a solution for everything. We just have to ask for help. And if we're sincere about making positive changes to our journey and planet, then it's going to come. You're absolutely right. So thank you. I appreciate all your.
Okay, thank you, Viata. Chris, any final comments for today and the week?
Be blessed, because we're not guaranteed tomorrow. So what are we going to do today to make tomorrow, making sure that yesterday never happened? And I appreciate being able to be on here and share time, and I appreciate all of her questions. But you know what? I'm going to leave it with a statement. Let's get that recycling material. You said it's piled up. Let's get it. I'm ready. So I need someone boots on the ground getting their intentions. And actually, I got something I'm going to share for some final words. You have a vision that you still have to see. It has been written, and it will be. You walk in darkness needing the light. I hope my words today will ignite a fire in your heart that water will not put out. There is no doubt in my mind that your future will change mankind. You're amazing in every way, especially when you open your eyes at the beginning of the day. Your destiny is done, but you have to start opening your heart and realize it's not about me, it's about we. Taking that M and turning it into a W will change the world. Every day begins with a why and it ends with one too, but it also begins with you. You need to know what your why is. This is very important for you to receive the truth that what it takes is you. You are so powerful you can't comprehend. Let's not waste another second. Let's start to spend. Our days together will empower. It will shower everywhere you are because you're a superstar. People need to realize that this is no surprise, that we are here for a reason, to change this season, to stop the violence and the silence of the people with no voice. You all have one. If you share yours with me, I will scream right beside you just to excite you. To know you're not alone, you're not helpless or hopeless, I am feeling like you're dopeless. It will be better than any drug when you get that huge hug. Here's the question you never have to answer to another person, and there's no way that you will worsen. Who are you when no one is around, when you get to create and make a sound? We need boots on the ground so that we can start to pound a message into everyone under the sun. You are wonderful. Find your joy. Take a moment and deploy. One common goal on this planet, starting out with a foundation as strong as granite, giving the world hope, the understanding that you are humans on planet Earth, housing our people everywhere. Everyone deserves a home. It takes a village to raise a child, but our children will become the teachers because they're pure love. This is enough without a bluff. You do not need to lie or deny, thereby taking a moment and putting down the donut, because that's what I see right now today in front of me. As I say these words, I'm just talking and sharing my thoughts. I hope it's for naught.
Awesome poetry.
What was that,
awesome poetry.
Go ahead, Viola.
I
saying?
Hope it's for naught. Go ahead.
No, I just said awesome poetry. Thank you. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Chris, was that the end of it? Because, you know,
yes,
the
sir.
Timer came on. That was it?
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Interesting to bring up recycling. There's a documentary on YouTube that people might be interested in called Garbage Warrior. And that goes into what Chris was saying about recycling. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day and terrific weekend.